bring it, just leave it with vanilla outside. Not there, no chance you have to ask me about it. Not there. That's what I already looked at earlier. Leave it with vanilla outside. I think you better stand up with the cockroach, because, Fine, I'll insert the word. You don't have to type the page. Don't type the page. No, he's right about that for me. I put things like that, you know, very simple. You don't type the page. Well, he's right about what he wanted, correct?
Yeah, in the long run, the effect of this mention.
strips, make it stabilize the dollar, you go back and you...
Second to that.
Retype that page.
Sure.
All right, I'll take the rest.
Here's the rest.
It's unstable. Well, then why don't we just leave it the way it is? Let me see that one.
So it doesn't have the page?
Yeah, please. Page 10. Okay. Let me leave the rest of the other page. Will this action reduce the value of the dollar? Yeah. Fine. Let me leave the rest of the other page. Yeah, all right, fine. Put and strike. All right, we'll strike out the words, will this again reduce, that will be that, and that word comes out. But you don't need to be kind of that. Now, in the short run, if you want to buy a foreign currency, all right, fine. I think that, but then so the effect of this event, the effect of this action will be to stabilize the dollar. Well, it's true at home and abroad, actually. All right. Yeah, I got it. That's right. That's right. We got it all.
It's a little now, it's been a couple of changes.
Well, let's see.
It must be the end. Very small question.
It's the first speech.
Yes.
I think I see. Yeah, well, I know that machine equipment. I shall insist that the American on over there. That's the suggestion. Right.
This will be right.
Do you think it's all right to say that? Good. Because they were such jerks. Good. All right. Well, then this will have to be about, well, if there's something important, of course, let me know. But I it's a little hard to change. All right. Well, it's important.
I understand.
But jerks. I addressed the nation a number of times over the past 2 years on the problems of ending the war. Because of the progress we have made for achieving that goal, this Sunday evening is an appropriate time for us to turn our attention to the challenges of peace. After today has the best opportunity in this century to achieve two of its greatest ideas: to bring about a generation of peace and to create a new prosperity without war. This not only requires bold leadership ready to take bold action, it calls for the greatness of a great people. Prosperity without war requires action on three fronts. War and better jobs. We must stop the rise in the cost of living. We must protect the dollar from the attacks of international monetary speculation. We are going to take that action, not timidly, not half-heartedly, not in piecemeal fashion. We are going to move forward with a new prosperity without war as befits a great people, all together and along a broad front. The time has come for a new economic policy for the United States. Its targets are unemployment, inflation, and international speculation. Here is how we're going to attack. First, on the subject of jobs. We all know why we have unemployment now. 2 million Americans, workers, have been released from the armed forces and defense plans because of our success in winding down the war in Vietnam. Putting those people back to work is one of the challenges of peace. We have got to make progress. We have begun to make progress. Our unemployment rate today is below the average of the four peacetime years of the 1960s. But we can and must do better. The time has come for American industry, which has produced more jobs at higher real wages than any other industrial system in history, to embark on a bold program of new investment in production for peace. To give that system a powerful new stimulus, I shall ask the Congress when it reconvenes after its summer recess to consider as its first priority the enactment of the Job Development Act of 1971. I propose to provide the strongest short-term incentive in our history to invest in new machinery and equipment that will create new jobs for Americans. A 10% job development credit for 1 year, effective as of today, with a 5% credit after August 15, 1972. This tax credit for investment in new equipment will not only generate new jobs, it will raise productivity and make our goods more competitive in the years ahead. I propose to repeal the 7% excise tax on automobiles, effective today. This will mean a reduction in prices of about $200 per car. I shall insist that the American auto industry pass this tax reduction on to its nearly 8 billion customers who are buying automobiles this year. Lower prices will mean that more people will be able to afford new cars, and every additional 100,000 cars sold means 25,000 new jobs. I propose to speed up the personal income tax exemptions scheduled for January 1, 1973 to January 1, 1972. So the taxpayers can deduct an extra $50 for each exemption 1 year earlier than planned. This increase in consumer spending power will provide a strong boost to the economy in general and to employment in particular. I recommend it, taken together with the broad upturn of the economy which has taken place in the first half of this year, will move us strongly forward for a goal this nation has not reached since 1956. Prosperity with full employment in peacetime. Looking to the future, I directed the Secretary of Treasury to recommend to the Congress in January new tax proposals for stimulating research and development of new industries and new technologies to help provide the 20 million new jobs that America needs for the young people who will be coming into the job market in the next decade. To offset the loss of revenue from these tax cuts which directly stimulate new jobs, I have ordered a $4.7 billion cut in federal spending. Tax cuts to stimulate employment must be matched by spending cuts to fight inflation, to restrain inflation. To check the rise in the cost of government, I have ordered postponement of pay raises and a 5% cut in government personnel. I have ordered a 10% cut in foreign economic aid. In addition, since the Congress has already delayed action on two of the great initiatives of this administration, I will ask Congress to amend my proposals to postpone the implementation of revenue sharing for 3 months and welfare reform for 1 year. This way, I am reordering our budget priorities to concentrate more on achieving full employment. The second indispensable element of the new prosperity is to stop the rise in the cost of living.
One of the cruelest legacies of the artificial prosperity produced by war is inflation. Inflation robs everyone. Find those who are retired living on fixed incomes are particularly hard. Homemakers find it harder than ever to balance the family budget. And 80 million wage earners have been on a trip, for example. In the four war years, between 1965 and 1969, their wage increases were completely eaten up by price increases. Their paychecks were higher, but they were no better off. We have made progress against the rise in the cost of living. From the high point of 6% a year in 1969, the rise in consumer prices have been cut to 4% in the first half of 1971. But just as in our fight against unemployment, we can and must do better. Time has come for decisive action to break the vicious circle of spiraling of our prices and costs. I am today ordering a freeze on all prices and wages throughout the United States for a period, just 60 to 90 days. I call upon corporations to extend that wage price freeze to all entities. I have today appointed a cost of living council in the government. I directed this council to work with leaders of labor and business to set up the proper mechanism for achieving continued price and wage stability after the 90-day freeze is over. Let me emphasize the characteristics of this action. It is temporary. To put the strong, vigorous American economy into a permanent straitjacket would lock in unfairness and stifle the expansion of our free enterprise system. Second, while the wage price freeze will be backed by government sanctions if necessary, it will not be accompanied by the establishment of a huge price control bureaucracy. I am relying on the voluntary cooperation of all Americans, workers, employers, consumers, to make the freeze work. Working together, we will break the back of inflation, and we will do it without the mandatory wage and price controls that crush economic and personal freedom. The third indispensable element in building new prosperity is closely related to creating new jobs and holding political inflation. We must protect the position of the American dollar as a pillar of monetary stability throughout the world. In the past 7 years, there has been an average of one international monetary crisis every year. Who gains from these crises? Not the working man, not the investor, not the real producers of wealth. The gainers are the international monetary speculators. Because they thrive on prices, they help improve them. In recent weeks, the speculators have been waging an all-out war on the American dollar. The strength of a nation's currency is based on the strength of that nation's economy, and the American economy is by far the strongest in the world. Accordingly, I have directed the Secretary of the Treasury to take the action necessary to defend the dollar against the speculators. I have directed Secretary Connally to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar into gold or other reserve assets, except in amounts and conditions determined to be in the interest of monetary stability and in the best interests of the United States. Today, the rest of the bucket list is devaluation. If you want to buy a foreign car or take a trip abroad, market conditions may cause your dollar to buy slightly less. Let me lay the rest of that. If you want to buy a foreign car or take a trip abroad, market conditions may cause your dollar to buy slightly less. But if you are among the overwhelming majority who buy American-made products in America, your dollar will be worth just as much tomorrow as it is today. The effect of this action will be to stabilize the dollar. This action will not win us many friends in the international monetary system. But our primary concern is with American workers, with fair competition around the world. To our friends abroad, including the many responsible members of the international banking community who are dedicated to stability and global trade, I give this assurance. The United States has always been and will continue to be a forward-looking, trustworthy, straight partner. When the unfair treatment is ended, the import tax will end as well. As a result of these actions, the product of American labor will be more competitive, and the unfair edge that some of our foreign competition has had will be removed. This is a major reason why our trade balance has eroded in the past 15 years. At the end of World War II, the economies of the major industrial nations of Europe and Asia were prospering. To help them get on their feet, to protect their freedom, the United States provided $143 billion in foreign aid. That was the right thing for us to do. Today, largely of our own, they have regained their vitality and become strong competitors. Since they're economically strong, the time has come for them to bear their fair share of the burden of defending freedom around the world. The time has come for exchange rates to be set straight for the major nations to compete as equals. Full cooperation with the International Monetary Fund and the necessary reforms to set up an urgently needed new international monetary system. Stability and equal treatment is in everybody's best interest. I am determined that the American dollar must never again be a hostage in the hands of international speculators. Taking one further step to protect the dollar, to improve our balance of payments, and to increase the United States jobs. I am today imposing an additional tax of 10% on goods imported into the United States. This is a better solution for international trade than direct controls of the amount of exports and imports. This import tax is a temporary action, not directed against any other country, but an action to make certain that American products will not be at a disadvantage because of unfair exchange rates. There is no longer any need for the United States to compete with one hand tied behind their back. The range of actions I have taken and proposed tonight, on the job front, on the inflation front, on the monetary front, is the most comprehensive economic policy to be undertaken by this nation in four decades. We are fortunate to live in a nation with an economic system capable of producing for its people the highest standard of living in the world. A system flexible enough to change its way dramatically when circumstances call for change. And most important, a system resourceful enough to produce prosperity with freedom and opportunity unmatched in the history of nations. The purpose of the government actions I have announced tonight is to lay the basis for a new economy, to make it possible for us to compete fairly with the rest of the world, to open the door to new prosperity. A government with all its powers does not hold the key to the success of the people. That key, my fellow Americans, is in your hands. A nation like a person has to have a certain inner drive in order to succeed. In economic affairs, that inner drive is called the competitive spirit. Every action I have taken tonight is designed to nurture and stimulate that competitive spirit, to help us snap out of that self-doubt, self-despairing that saps our energy, erodes our confidence in ourselves. Whether this nation stays number one in the world's economy, or resigns itself to second, third, or fourth place, whether we as a people insist our faith ourselves, or lose that faith, whether we hold fast to the strength that makes peace and freedom possible in this world or lose our grip, all that depends on your competitive spirit, your sense of personal destiny, your pride in your country, yourself. We can be certain of this. As the threat of war recedes, the challenge of peaceful competition in the world will increase. We welcome competition. God breaks, she is called on to compete. And no nation has anything to fear from our competition because we lead our competitors on to new heights for their own people. As there has always been in our history, there will be voices urging us to shrink from that challenge, to build a protective wall around ourselves, to crawl into a shell as the rest of the world moves ahead. 200 years ago, a man wrote in his diary, "Many thinking people believe America has seen its best days." That was written 1775, at the dawn of the most exciting era in the history of man, the birth of the American nation. Today, we hear the echoes of those voices preaching a gospel of gloom and defeat, saying the same thing: we have seen our best days. I say, let Americans reply, our best days lie ahead. As we move into a new generation of peace, as we praise the trail toward a new prosperity, I say to every American, let us raise our spirits. Let us raise our sights. Let all of us contribute all we can to the great and good country that contributes so much to the progress of mankind. Let us invest in our nation's future. And let us revitalize that faith in ourselves that built a great nation in the past and that will shape the world in the future. Thank you.
Talking about our competitors in the world. There's no nation of anything but
fear from our competition, because we are competitive on the price for their own people. From our competition, no. And no nation has anything to fear from our competition. No. You are, because America is everybody. He's calling you. To be our competitors, you see, it just sort of puts them in the position of we're leading and they're following. You see, rather than the real, what we're really trying to say here is that competition will bring the best out of us and the best out of them. That's really what we're saying. We welcome competition. Maybe it's just as well to leave the whole sentence off. I don't think we have to help a lot anymore. Just leave out no nation and interfere from our competition, because we welcome competition, because America is at her greatest and she's called on her people. To them, my service. See what I mean? I don't think the thought particularly adds, and it might be misunderstood. Is it really needed to be said? We welcome because America is at her greatest and she's called on her people. In the end. We don't need it, because basically anybody can say this, they expect us to say that, and that's exactly what they would say. I think that whole sentence will come out a little bit about me. No problem with that one in the name text. You know we're not going to put the text out from that regular anyway. A small one that you might write in on yours. You know, that was in 1777-75, at the dawn of the most exciting era in the history of man. I think I would say that the birth of the American nation. And when they say many thinking people believe America is in its best days, that was in 1775, at the dawn of the most exciting era in history of man. It may be the most exciting era where we all say America. We're simply saying that at that time, this is the way it reads now, though. See, that's in the text. That was in 1775, at the dawn of the most exciting era in history of man. Maybe that has to be changed then. Well, I'm not narrowing it to that. I mean, that was the verb. I mean, that's the beginning of it. The verb of the American nation is the beginning of the most exciting era in history of man. At the dawn of the most exciting era in history of man. You see what I mean? It isn't related as it presently stands to the American, to the beginning of America. That's my problem. The American Revolution. Just before the American Revolution. At the dawn of the most exciting era in history of man. Why don't you got that changed there? That was in 1775. I will say it there, just before the American Revolution, just before the American Revolution, the dawn of the most exciting. Back to the auto thing. I wonder if it's, despite our, they deserve everything, having in mind that we've really got to work with these people, if it's really worth doing that. Who have you talked to besides Steinhardt? I shall insist. And his view was that they just hadn't been cooperative enough. Right, I shall insist. That's right. Well, we're giving business a hell of a lot. Let us say we're being able to do this. Insert another sentence, because I'm going to put it in orally, and I think it should be in the text, where we say, let me rest the bugger with evaluation. If you come cut out the next sentence, you're not really relating it to people enough. I think you should, we have to put a question in there. Just before we say, let me lay the rest of it, I should say, what does this action mean for you? Let me lay the rest of it. Let me lay the rest of my group evaluation. What does this action mean for you? Do you want to buy a four? See what I mean? We're at the economy of the major industrial nations. Europe and Asia were prostrate. It's not a very good word for an average person. Should we just say on their backs? Yeah, or prostrate. Well, prostrate would be what it means. We're shattered. That a lot of people don't quite get that. I think we're shattered. No problem. In any event, I'm going to deliver it that way, and how I deliver it is the way that text must be put out. So Rosemary typed it, just every time. So they already run the thing? I suppose they have. Huh? Well, in any event, you can just make these text. Okay, fine. Appropriate time for us to turn our attention to the challenges of peace. America Day is the best opportunity in this century to attain two of its greatest ideals, to bring about a full generation of peace, to create a new prosperity without war. This not only requires bold leadership ready to take bold action, it calls forth the greatness of the great people. Prosperity without war requires action on three fronts. We must create more and better jobs. We must stop the rise in the cost of living. We must protect the dollar from the attacks of international monetary speculators. We are going to take that action, not timidly, not half-heartedly, not in a piecemeal fashion. We are going to move forward into new prosperity without war, as befits a great people, all together and along a broad front. The time has come for a new economic policy for the United States. Its targets are unemployment, inflation, and international speculation. Here's how we're going to attack them. First, on the subject of jobs, we all know why we have an unemployment problem. 2 million Americans have been released from the armed forces and defense plans because of our success in winding down the war in Vietnam. Putting those people back to work is one of the challenges of peace. We've got to make progress. Our unemployment rate today is below the average of the four peacetime years of the 1960s. But we can and must do better. The time has come for American industry, which has produced more jobs at higher real wages than any other industrial system in history, to embark on a bold program of new investment in production for peace. To give that system a powerful new stimulus, I shall ask the Congress, when it reconvenes after its summer recess, to consider as its first priority the enactment of the Job Development Act of 1971. I propose to provide the strongest short-term incentive in our history to invest in new machinery and equipment that will create new jobs for Americans. A 10% job development credit for 1 year, effective as of today, with a 5% credit after August 15, 1972. This tax credit for investment in new equipment will not only generate new jobs, it will raise productivity and make our goods more competitive in the years ahead. I propose to repeal the 7% excise tax on automobile goods effective today. This will mean a reduction in price of about $200 per car. I shall insist that the American auto industry pass this tax reduction on to its 38 million customers who are buying automobiles this year. Lower prices will mean that more people will be able to afford new cars, and every additional 100,000 cars sold means 25,000 new jobs. I propose to speed up the personal income tax exemption scheduled from January 1, 1973 to January 1, 1972, so that taxpayers can deduct an extra $50 for each exemption 1 year earlier than planned. This increase in consumer spending will provide a strong boost to the economy in general, Equipment in particular. The tax reductions I am recommending, taken together with the broad upturn of the economy, which is taking place in the first half of this year, will move us strongly toward a goal this nation has not reached since 1956. Prosperity with full employment in peacetime. Okay. into the future. Looking to the future, I have directed the Secretary of the Treasury to recommend to the Congress in January new tax proposals for stimulating research and development of new industries and new technologies to help provide money for the new jobs that America needs for the young people who will be coming into the job market in the next decade. To offset the loss of revenues from these tax cuts, which directly stimulate new jobs, I have ordered a $4.7 billion cut in federal spending. Tax cuts to stimulate employment must be matched by spending cuts to reduce inflation. Should restrain inflation. Check the rise in the cost of government. I have ordered postponement of pay raises and a 5% cut of government employment. I have ordered a 10% cut in foreign economic. In addition, since the Congress has already delayed action on two of the great initiatives of this administration, I will ask Congress to amend my proposals to postpone the implementation of revenue sharing for 3 months and welfare reform for a year. This way, I am reordering our budget priorities to concentrate more on achieving full employment. What's allowed for the new prosperity is to stop the rise in the cost of life. One of the cruelest legacies of this artificial prosperity produced by war is inflation. Inflation robs every American. 20 million who are retired living on fixed incomes are particularly hard. Homemakers find it harder than ever to balance the family budget. And 80 million wage earners have been on a treadmill. For example, in the four war years between 1965 and 1969, their wage increases were completely eaten up by price increases. Their paychecks were higher, but they were no better off. We have made progress against the rise in the cost of living. From the high point of 6% in 1969, the rise in consumer prices has been cut to 4% in the first half of 71. Just as the fight against unemployment, we can and we must do better. The time has come for decisive action to break the vicious circle of spiraling prices and costs. I'm ordering today a freeze on all prices and wages throughout the United States for a period of 90 days. In addition, I call upon corporations to extend the wage price freeze for all veterans. I have today appointed a cost of living council within the government. I have directed this council to work with leaders of labor and business to set up the proper mechanism for achieving continued price and wage stability after the 90-day freeze is over. Let me emphasize two characteristics of this action. First, it is temporary. To put the strong, vigorous American economy into a permanent straitjacket would lock in unfairness and stifle the expansion of our free enterprise system. Our wage price freeze will be backed by government sanctions as necessary. It will be accompanied by the establishment, not be accompanied by the establishment, of a huge price control device. I am relying on voluntary contributor cooperation of all Americans, workers, employers, consumers, all of you, to make this freeze work. Working together, we will break the back of inflation, and we will do it without the mandatory wage and price controls that crush economic and personal freedom. The third indispensable element in building new prosperity is closely related to creating new jobs and all the inflation. We must protect the position of the American dollar as a pillar of monetary stability throughout the world. In the past 7 years, there has been an average of one international monetary crisis every year. Who gains from these crises? Not the working man, not the investor, not the real producers of wealth. The gainers are the international monetary speculators. Because they thrive on crises, they help to create them. In recent weeks, the speculators have been waging an all-out war in American life. The strength of a nation's currency is based on the strength of that nation's economy, and the American economy is by far the strongest in the world. Accordingly, I have directed the Secretary of the Treasury to take the action necessary to defend the dollar against the speculators. I directed Secretary Connally to suspend temporarily convertibility of the dollar into gold or other reserve asset, except amounts and conditions determined to be the interests of monetary stability and the best interest of the United States. All right, please. Gold. I have another thought that it seems to me might, you know, where we talk about this convertibility thing, it occurs to me that we just assume that actually, when we say I direct the Secretary of Commerce to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar to gold, except when the conditions are and so on, everybody knows that's an international transaction. You get what I mean? the average person, of course, is not, the average person may think, my God, I can't, my God, even no matter what we say. I'm wondering if Chairman Spicy would be our voter, very second, to suspend temporarily international transactions. See what I mean? There's no convertibility. I guess it is just important that it's just going to be hard for people to understand and let people out. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, all right. Suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar to hold the reserve assets. That would be useful. Okay, thank you.
Or resigns itself to second, third, or fourth place,
people instill our faith in ourselves or lose that faith. Whether we hold fast to the strength that makes peace and freedom possible in this world or lose our grip. All that depends on your competitive spirit, your sense of personal destiny, your pride in your country and yourself. We can be certain of this. As the threat of war recedes in the world, the challenge of peaceful competition in the world increases. Not a peaceful competition, because America is at a risk and she is called on to compete. And in history, as there always have been in our history, there will be voices urging us to shrink from that challenge, to build a protective wall around ourselves, to crawl into a shell as the rest of the world moves ahead. 200 years ago, a man wrote in his diary, "Many thinking people believe America has seen its best days." That was in 1775, just before the American Revolution, the dawn of the most exciting era in the history of man. Today, we hear the echoes of those voices preaching the gospel of gloom and defeat, saying the same thing, "We have seen our best days." I say, let Americans reply, "Our best days lie ahead." As we move ahead into a generation of peace, as we blaze the trail toward a new prosperity, I say to every American, let us raise our spirits. Let us raise our sights. Let all of us contribute all we can to this great and good country that contributes so much to the progress of mankind. Let us invest in our nation's future. And let us revitalize that faith in ourselves that built a great nation in the past and will shape the future.
New jobs for Americans.
a 10% job development credit for 1 year, effective as of today, with a 5% credit after August 15, 1972. This tax credit for investment in new equipment will not only generate new jobs, it will raise productivity, make our goods more competitive in the years ahead. I propose to repeal 7% excise tax on automobiles effective today. This will mean a reduction in prices of about $200 per car. I shall insist that the American auto industry pass this tax reduction on to its nearly 8 million customers who are buying automobiles this year. Lower prices will mean that more people will be able to afford new cars, and every additional 100,000 cars sold, will mean 25,000 new jobs. Third, I propose to speed up the personal income tax exemption scheduled for January 1, 1973 to January 1, 1972, so that taxpayers can deduct an extra $50 for each exemption 1 year earlier than planned. This increase in consumer spending power will provide a strong boost to the economy in general and to employment in particular. The tax reductions I am recommending, together with the broad upturn in the economy which has taken place in the first half of this year, will move us strongly toward a goal this nation has not reached since 1956, prosperity with full employment in peacetime. Looking to the future, I shall direct the Secretary of the Treasury to recommend to the Congress in January new tax proposals for stimulating research and development of new industries and new technologies to help provide the 20 million new jobs that America needs for the young people who will be coming into the job market in the next decade. To offset the loss of revenue from these tax cuts, which directly stimulate new jobs, I have ordered a $4.7 billion cut in federal spending. Tax cuts to stimulate employment must be matched by spending cuts to restrain inflation. To check the rise in the cost of government, I have ordered postponement of pay raises and a 5% cut in government employment. I have ordered a 10% cut in foreign economic aid. In addition, since the Congress has already delayed action due to the great initiatives of this administration, I will ask Congress to amend my proposals to postpone the implementation of revenue sharing for 3 months and welfare reform for 1 year. This way, I am reordering our budget priorities to concentrate more on achieving full employment. The second indispensable element of new prosperity is to stop the rise in the cost of living. One of the cruelest legacies of the artificial prosperity produced by war is inflation. Inflation robs every American. The 20 million who are retired living on fixed incomes are particularly hard hit. Homemakers find it harder than ever to balance the family budget. And the 80 million American wage earners have been on the treadmill. For example, in the four war years between 1965 and 1969, your wage increases were completely eaten up by price increases. Your paychecks were higher, but you were no better off. We have made progress against the rise in the cost of living. From the high point of 6% a year in 1969, the rise in consumer prices has been cut to 4% in the first half of 71. Just as in our fight against unemployment, we can and must do better. Time has come for decisive action to break the vicious circle of spiraling prices and costs. I am ordering a freeze today. I am ordering a freeze on all prices and wages throughout the United States for a period of 90 days. In addition, I call upon corporations to extend that wage price freeze to all dividends. I have today invited a cost of living council within the government. I have directed this council to work with leaders of labor and business to set up the proper mechanism for achieving continued price and wage stability after the 90-day freeze is over. Let me emphasize two characteristics for this action. First, it is temporary. To put the strong, vigorous American economy into a permanent straitjacket would lock in unfairness and stifle the expansion of our free enterprise system. Second, while the wage price freeze will be backed by government sanctions if necessary, it will not be accompanied by the establishment of a huge price control bureaucracy. I rely on the voluntary cooperation of all Americans, all of you, workers, employers, consumers, to make this freeze work. Working together, we will break the back of inflation, and we will do it without the mandatory wage and price controls that crush economic and personal freedom. The third indispensable element in building the new prosperity is closely related creating new jobs and fighting inflation. We must protect the position of the American dollar as a pillar of monetary stability throughout the world. the past 7 years, there's been an average of one international monetary crisis every year. Who gains from these crises? Not the working man, not the investor, not the real producer of wealth. The gainers are the international money speculators. Because they thrive on crises, they help to make. In recent weeks, the speculators have been waging an all-out war on the American dollar. The strength of a nation's currency is based on the strength of that nation's economy. And the American economy is by far the strongest in the world. Accordingly, I direct the Secretary of the Treasury to take the action necessary to defend the dollar against speculators. I direct the Secretary of Commerce to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar to gold or other reserve assets except in amounts and conditions determined to be in the interest of monetary stability and in the best interests of the United States. Now, what does this action mean for you? Let me lay to rest the bugaboo of devaluation. If you want to buy a foreign car or take a trip abroad, market conditions may cause your dollar to buy slightly less. But if you are among the overwhelming majority of Americans who buy American-made products in America, your dollar will be worth just as much tomorrow as it is today. The effect of this action will be to stabilize the dollar. This action will not win us any friends among the international money traders. But our principal concern is with the American workers and with fair competition around the world. To our friends abroad, including the many responsible members of the International Banking Union, who are dedicated to stability and the flow of trade, I give this assurance. The United States has always been and will continue to be a forward-looking and trustworthy trading partner. In full cooperation with the International Monetary Fund, those who trade with us, we will press for the necessary reforms to set up an urgently needed new international monetary system. Stability and equal treatment is in everybody's best interest. I am determined that the American dollar must never again be a hostage in the hands of international speculators. I'm taking on further steps in protecting the dollar to improve our balance of payments and to increase jobs for Americans. As a temporary nature, I am today imposing an additional tax of 10% on goods imported to the United States. This is a better solution for international trade than direct controls on the amount of imports. This import tax is a temporary action, not directed against any other country, but an action to make certain that American products will not be at a disadvantage because of unfair exchange rates. When the unfair treatment is ended, the import tax will end as well. As a result of these actions, the product of American labor will be more competitive, and the unfair edge that some of our foreign competition has will be removed. This is a major reason why our trade balance has eroded for the past 15 years. At the end of World War II, the economies of the major industrial nations of Europe and Asia were shattered. To help them get on their feet, to protect their freedom, the United States provided $143 billion in foreign aid. That was the right thing for us to do. Today, largely with our help, they have regained their vitality, have become our strong competitors. We welcome their success. But now that other nations are economically strong, the time has come for them to bear their fair share of the burden of defending freedom around the world. The time has come for exchange rates to be set straight, for the major nations to compete as equals. There is no longer any need for the United States to compete with one hand tied behind your back. The range of actions I have taken and proposed tonight on the job front, on the inflation front, on the monetary front is the most comprehensive new economic policy to be undertaken by this nation in four decades. We are fortunate to live in a nation with an economic system capable of producing for its people the highest standard of living in the world, a system flexible enough to change its ways dramatically when circumstances call for change, and most important, a system resourceful enough to produce prosperity with freedom and opportunity unmatched in the history of nations. The purpose of the government actions I have announced tonight are to lay the basis for renewed confidence, to make it possible for us to compete fairly with the rest of the world, to open the door to new prosperity. A government with all of its powers does not hold the key to the success of the people. That key, my fellow Americans, is in your hands. A nation like a person has to have a certain inner drive in order to succeed. In economic affairs, that inner drive is called a competitive spirit. Every action I have taken tonight is designed to nurture and stimulate that competitive spirit. help us snap out of that self-doubt, self-despairing that saps our energy and erodes our confidence in ourselves. Whether this nation stays number one in the world's economy or resigns itself to second or third or fourth place, whether we as a nation instill our faith in ourselves or lose that faith, whether we hold fast the strength that makes peace and freedom possible in this world or lose our grip, all that depends on your competitive spirit, your sense of personal destiny, your pride in your country and yourself. We can be certain of this. As the threat of war recedes, the challenge of peaceful competition in the world increases. We welcome competition because America is at her greatest when she is called on to compete. As there's always been in our history, there are worldly voices urging us to strengthen that challenge, to build a protective wall around ourselves, to crawl into a shell as the rest of the world moves ahead. 200 years ago, an American wrote in his diary, Many thinking people believe America has seen its best days. That was written in 1775, just before the American Revolution, the dawn of the most exciting era in the history of man. Today, we hear the echoes of those voices preaching the gospel of gloom and defeat, saying the same thing. We have seen our best days. I say, let Americans reply, our best days lie ahead. As we move into a generation of peace, as we blaze the trail for the new prosperity, I say to every American, let us raise our spirits. Let us raise our sights. Let all of us contribute all we can to this great and good country that contributes so much to the progress of mankind. Let us invest in our nation's future. Let us revitalize that faith in ourselves that built a great nation in the past and will shape the world.
I am the American one. Never again be a hostage.
something in ourselves.